Welcome to the Patty Cakes Podcast Show.
What makes you so fabulous, Miss Rachel St. John?
My animation about my personality, the animation and the things that come off the top of my head.
Right, you're very improvisational.
Very improvisational. It just comes out.
I know, it just spews out.
There is no filter.
Sometimes it's necessary to put a cork in that improvisation.
Sometimes there's just no filter to my mouth or my brain.
Well, tell the audience who you are. I mean, because you got some titles behind that name, et cetera, et cetera.
My given name is John Ross. My stage name is Rachel St. John. I have been doing female impersonation for over 40, almost 50 years. I actually stopped doing it about 10 years ago, although as a former Miss Gigi's, 1982-83, last year was my 40th anniversary to that title. So I did do a number at that show.
Oh, wow.
And it was spectacular. It was overwhelming for me.
It was like Cher's final
concert or something. It was like Cher's 10th final concert.
Her 10th final concert.
She had a 10-minute standing ovation after she was done.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You did when you said she.
I did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rachel did. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was about 4 or 5 minutes. It was not 10, but it was overwhelming.
Yeah. How long ago was this?
Last year.
Just last
for
year.
For the 40th.
50th.
Gigi's Bar in Detroit is the longest continuous show and show bar in the United States.
Wow.
It celebrated 50 years as a bar this year, and as a continuous show, it had 50 years of a continuous show. Other bars have had longevity, but they've closed down, resold it, whatever. This is an actual continuation.
Unbroken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it does have new owners, but they actually picked up the business of the bar, so there was actually just a change in ownership names. That was it.
Yeah, the same spirit.
The same everything was
mission,
just
vision.
They just brought new money and brought it up to the 2023 standards.
Yeah.
But as far as, in fact, the old owners still own and retain the building itself. It's just really the business that has changed names.
Wow.
And some of it is still part of incorporate some of the old owners. So it's just a continuation.
Great.
So having been the 40th anniversary last year from, I was 82, 83, in 2022, I celebrated my 40 years as a title holder of Miss Gigi's. And I did a number.
Okay, excuse me one second. You're saying 40 years, but mm-hmm. 1973 to 1923 is 50 years.
Well, that's when I started going there.
Oh, so you were there 10...
It opened in 1973.
Right, 50 years ago.
50 years ago.
Your title came in
10 years later.
In 1980.
82, 83.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But I had entered Miss Amateur Gigi's a year previous, and I was second runner-up.
Okay.
And the only reason I lost that thing is because
the first
girl,
year.
When I walked on that stage, the first entrance onto the stage, I fell flat on my face.
You tripped. Over what? Some bitch probably put.
Over my homemade dress that were curtains.
Some girl probably set something up there to trip you up.
I'm serious. I fell. I went in because you entered the stage from the rear. And I came up, and you had to step up on the step, and I stepped up, and I fell flat on my face.
So, because that's the way the stage is set up, it's like you take a step, and then the audience sees you. So
right.
So the audience saw you.
I flapped right down.
You should have. Did you make that part of the number?
Then I got up, dusted myself off, and went right into my number.
Beautiful.
So just like the pro I am, honey.
Okay. That was the first try.
And that was my very first time into doing drag.
Wow. That's quite a night. What song did you do?
I did my Toadie Fields.
Okay.
Which is comedic. And then I did my second number. I did a Judy Garland medley.
Wow.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley into You Made Me Love You, into... I can't
remember.
And
this 1982.
That was 1981.
81 for the first year. That's right. Yep. That's right.
81.
When did Judy Garland die?
78, I think it was.
Okay. So that was pretty fresh on everybody's mind.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the number for the 40th anniversary?
Yeah.
From
Toadie Fields.
Oh, so it's went back to where you started.
I did Sexy Me. But I did not do Sexy Me originally for Miss Amateurs. I did Sexy Me when I won. Actually, we had to do two numbers, and I did Sexy Me for Miss Gigi's in 1982, and I did From Bubbling Brown Sugar, His Eyes on the Sparrow.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
That's a good bookend.
Honey, and I got the spirit in that. Oh, those girls... God. I'll never forget the very first time, because you know Gigi's is a very integrated.
Give me the opening of my eyes.
Gigi's is a very integrated bar,
yeah.
So there's a lot of black girls. When you come out doing Bubbling Brown Sugar as a black person,
Bubbling Brown Sugar,
no.
Is it that one?
Dun, dun, dun. It starts off. Let me see how it starts off.
Well, you know,
his eye is on the sparrow. And I know he watches over me. Oh, yes. And so,
and
those girls were like,
church.
Those girls were, oh, it was, honey, it was church. Because those girls, they were judges. There were 10 judges, and about three of them were black. And they said, no, she's not.
Oh, wow.
Because there was a famous queen from Flo, Texas, that used to do it. Well, I can't remember her name. Tempest will know it, the name.
Yeah.
But you was very famous, and he had come to Detroit to do the number, and I went to see him do it. And he did it in a scrub woman outfit, and I did it in a scrub woman outfit.
Oh, my God. You didn't do blackface, did you?
No.
Okay,
But, mind you, this is a contest to win a title, and I come out there in a schmata outfit, like a scrub lady outfit, with an apron on and a do-rag on my head with no wig, just my regular hair brushed down. And they said, this bitch, where's that wig? Where's that sequins?
Oh, the wig
is
on.
Tempest.
Oh, ask Tempest what the name of the whatever you just mentioned. She would know the name of the singer.
Hello. Oh, do you remember the girl that did His Eyes on the Sparrow back in the 80s that came from Texas? What was her name?
Odessa Brown.
That's who it was.
Okay.
Odessa Brown, yeah. Because that's where we're talking about how I won Miss Gigi's, and I said I did that number,
and
I got it from Odessa Brown. Okay, that's right. Yep.
That's a nice way to bookend the career from start, first time
yeah,
to
I
last.
Stole it. She says, you stole it from Odessa Brown. That bitch was in Texas. I was in Michigan.
Well, there were no copyright laws and trademark laws, right? Back at the turn of the century when you did this number.
Bitch, you did not.
Copyrights didn't come in until the 50s.
All right. She'll be right up there in about 3 minutes. Bye.
Bye, Tempest. Isn't that perfect? We're going to use this.
No.
The phone call?
No.
Why not?
Odessa Brown.
Odessa Brown is the name.
And she was about big girl like me, 400 pounds.
Wow.
Except he was about 6'2". So he was big, tall girl.
Is this a drag queen?
Drag queen.
Odessa
yes.
Brown.
Odessa
That was
Brown.
Her performing name.
That was her performing name.
Oh, my God. Yep. That's probably like her grandma's name or something.
Yeah. In fact, I wonder if there's anything. Because she died back in, I think, like the 90s.
Really?
So she might be. Yeah. Uh-huh. Let me see.
Yeah. Look it up.
No, it's they don't have anything on Odessa Brown. See, back in those days in drag, there was no internet or nothing like that.
People are having to archive shit. And
yeah, so it was not thing.
I got a question for you. Gigi's 50 years unbroken ownership concept show bar in Detroit. Are they registered with the Historical Society of
Detroit? Actually, it's interesting you say. Governor Whitmer, it's already registered as a historical site by the city of Detroit. Mm-hmm. The mayor has registered it as a historical. Nice. But Governor Whitmer of thing is actually in the process of getting it known as a historical site in the state of Michigan.
For the state. Okay.
For the state.
So, the city's
so that
done
way,
it,
once it goes to the state, it actually could become a national archive.
Right. And then
because it first has to go through the state registry.
Does that get the money or maintenance or
something? Well, what
grants?
National, it does. When you register something as a national thing, you can actually apply for grants for historical buildings.
And preservation.
And preservation.
And there's your remodel.
Right, right.
Wow.
Yeah, because these new owners see all the infrastructure for Gigi's. They put in almost $100,000 of their own money into the restructure of some of that stuff.
Right.
The heating, the air conditioning, okay. The air. Like, if you notice that it had no mildew smell when you went in there.
No, but you know, it did 18 years ago when Gary and I filmed that movie.
It did. Oh, yeah. It really did. It used to have a terrible smell.
Mm-hmm.
All that's been rectified. They built that outside smoking area. That's a nice outside smoking area.
It's totally.
It
it's
really
a good hangout, too.
And it's a great, exactly, you know. Mm-hmm. They have the upstairs, and the sound system. You saw how good the sound.
Yeah.
They put in all the infrastructure. The plumbing in there was really bad. They did a lot of that. The air conditioning, the heating, all of that was redone. If you notice, we were in the basement. There was no mildew smell.
The ceiling was,
There was no mildew, no dampness. All that's been eradicated.
What I realized about it when I filmed 18 years ago, we went in and was downstairs.
Right.
I didn't know Gigi's had an upstairs.
Yeah.
And it's really like a double-decker.
It is.
Show bar.
Yeah.
Because it's two stages. Have you ever had two shows going on at the same time?
Years ago, they used to have... Gigi's was, because of the age of it... Upstairs was a lesbian bar. Downstairs was a gay men's bar.
That's awesome.
And then it switched at different times during its incarnation.
Okay.
The downstairs was a lesbian bar. Upstairs was a gay bar.
Okay.
In the back where the DJ is upstairs, that whole thing was an actual functioning kitchen at one time.
The story.
They used to serve in the 70s and part of the 80s a full menu that you could go in there and dine because... There were no restaurants that a gay person could go to and have a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As a couple.
So gay show bar
so
and restaurant.
So you know that tier upstairs where you sat the up part and up that is the original dining room area. That was the dining. So if you wanted to eat, you sat up there and the waiters waited on you there.
Okay.
It had booths and everything.
Oh my God.
All that's been taken out and redone. The kitchen's all been taken out and redone too.
Okay.
So all of that, but they had an actual cook that cooked in there. And,
bar. Well, they had the bar. There
well, during the day, Johanna and her wife. What was her nice wife's name? See, again, Tempest would know that, but I can't. Johanna and her wife used to ran the kitchen, and during the day, you could go in. See, for all the. Automotive industry of Dearborn was all Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
Ford Motor Company was one of the original companies that formed a thing with the LGBTQ community for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
They were very supportive of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you used to get a lot of executives from Fords. They used to come there and have lunch, and they were...
LGBT
on the down low.
Okay,
they were on the down low.
Okay.
There were a couple of them. And see, because they used to open at 11 o'clock every morning.
For lunch.
And then for lunch, they served French fries. They had a fabulous ground round hamburger with French fries. And I think it was like $5.99 for the two in those days.
Wow.
And it was great. It was really good. And then, you know, because, you know, back in the 70s, all the businessmen went out for a drink for lunch. That's what they did. So they take
2 hour lunches,
you know,
shit.
And see, and then back in the 70s, there was no internet or nothing. So you used to have all the boys, all the little hustler boys,
hanging
all out. The little chickens. Uh-huh. See, that originally in the 70s, Gigi's was known as a chicken bar. Because Don Tony...
Well, tell the audience who might not know what a chicken is in the gay community.
It's a young boy.
Okay, fresh.
A young boy. A fresh young boy. But see, you had to be 18 to get in the bar.
Right.
Well, because... And Tony Garnou, who owned it, there was really no place for what I call throwaway kids, teenagers that were gay, 14,
okay,
15,
yeah.
16,
oh my goodness.
To go to. And Tony, who owned it, used to let them come there in the afternoons and sit and even into the evening and feed them. And how sometimes
goodness.
He'd take them to their house. And I mean, very generous. That's what Tempest did with her house.
Okay.
And she housed 17 children, throwouts. In
wow.
her day.
Oh,
yeah, that's why she's known as Mach to a lot of kids.
Yeah.
But that was because Nikki was one of those kids.
Okay.
And Renee.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I wish Renee, because yeah. when Renee said we all had somebody new living there and stuff, because
yeah.
there was always room for somebody.
How beautiful
yep.
is that? Oh my goodness.
And Tony did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Tony, he loved his chicken boys, but he took care of them.
This is the owner of...
The owner of Gigi's, and
right.
he took care of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, always giving money. I know an example. I can tell you an example. This is the truth. Good friend of mine, he graduated from high school, graduated from junior college, Henry Ford Community College. He was one of the throwaway boys of Tony... Tony, he moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
Tony paid for his move, paid for him to live till he could get a job and be on his feet. And today, he's a multimillionaire.
That kid.
Who was the first Rachel on Another World?
There you go.
Robin Strauss, the original Rachel from Another World. Vintage television, Another World soap opera.
Okay.
What's that name?
Well, give... Gary's hearing it. Maybe Gary, we could get a picture of her and scroll
her in there.
Yeah,
there's a picture of her.
What's her name? Rachel?
Rachel Strauss.
Is that her? Okay.
Yeah.
Rachel Strauss is the character.
Uh-huh.
And then what's her real name?
That's her real name, Rachel. Oh, no, Robin Strauss is her real name.
Robin Strauss is her real name, mm-hmm. and the character she played on Another World in the 70s was Rachel. Yeah, let's get a picture of that up on the reel. Okay, so let's get back to your name. Get out of that
so
Google.
So anyway, Rachel, that bitch had 5 or 6 husbands.
Okay. So she was your idol.
And I always thought, if I ever change my name, I change it to Rachel.
Okay.
Rachel, and then my name is John Ross.
Right.
So I always wanted to change my real name to Ross St. John.
Yeah.
That
does sound more she.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, see, originally when I went to culinary arts school, I wanted to go to New York and become an actor. That was my main goal.
Oh, so you were already thinking about a celebrity
I
name.
Was all done.
Okay.
Honey, I had it all figured out. And then I got segued into other things. But,
right.
you know, the thing is back in 1972 and 73... And not being a size 32, 33 inch waist, which I never was, you know, I felt so...
Self-conscious?
Not good enough.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, I didn't have that, I didn't have that confidence in myself.
At that point.
I didn't have the, you know what? It's like, what's his name who did a Torch Song trilogy? What's his name?
Harvey
Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was raised in New York.
Right.
So he had that chutzpah that nobody else had. You know, I'm from Detroit, a suburb, and there was none of that.
Right.
You know, I created more aggressiveness and more assertiveness for myself as I grew older just because I learned that that's what it took. to be aggressive.
Right.
And not really aggressive, more assertive to let you know what I need.
Confidence stuff and stepping into
our own. And I didn't have that confidence. I wasn't raised with a mother that did that. I was raised by a single mother.
Well, our community does that. You know, a lot of LGBTQ, et cetera, grow.
Oh, that was her name. Rachel Corey.
In the character's name was Rachel Corey.
Yeah, Rachel Corey. Okay. She was married to Matt Corey from another world.
Tell me that, you know.
It started in 1974, honey.
So you were there watching it in 74.
I was watching before I went to work.
How old were you in 74 then? Let them work for your age.
19.
You were 19 then. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know how old Miss St. John is, you do the math.
Now, see, and then in 1977, Mac and Rachel wanted a child, but Rachel couldn't get pregnant.
Here you are. Okay, Google it, everybody. What's the website you got all that up on? Google?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Mac Corey and Rachel Corey.
Yeah, if your kids want a footnote, whoever's listening, you Google that, her name.
So here you go.
Gives the whole thing.
She got married in 1975, divorced in 1979, remarried again in 1980, divorced again in 1981, remarried in 1982.
So every year.
Renewed her vows in 1987. And discovered by death in 1989, she died.
Oh, my gosh.
So that bitch had husbands out the door.
When that happens, it's the real actor dies, so they have to kill the person.
No, they kill the person off.
Oh, they killed the character off.
They killed the character. Okay. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the sense of not being good enough. You told me a story about when you were going to perform, and your outfit was sabotaged.
Yeah.
Are you willing to share that with us?
Well, it's simple. It was my very first show, second show outside of Gigi's. It was the second show in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a guest spot with Miss Jennifer Fox.
Yes.
She had won Miss America title. And this was 82, 83, or 81, 82 is when
she had the title.
She had the title of Miss America.
Okay.
And I was the guest person, and she was the headliner.
Gotcha.
Well, when I got there, all my stuff, I only had two or three outfits at the most at that time. Mm-hmm. And when I went on stage with my one outfit, and when I came back to change into a second outfit, everything had been dumped in a corner and drinks had been spilled on it.
Wow.
So I didn't know what to do. So I wore the same outfit back on stage that I'd worn the first time because that's all I could do.
Let me compliment you for a second here. You tripped in your first appearance.
That was my first appearance. This was my second appearance.
Wait, let me say this. You tripped and dusted yourself off and did your number. You do a first number, and your outfit for the second number is sabotaged.
Yep.
And you realize this. You go back on stage in the same first outfit and perform your second number.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's fortitude. You don't learn that. You're born with that. Okay. So I'm paying you that compliment
Thank you. My whole life was that way. I never allowed anybody to... I tried not to allow people to demean me in any way. Mm-hmm. I rose above it.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow.
So
wow.
I tried to. Sometimes it's not easy, but, you know, you learn. And I got to tell you, my father, my real father, he was very, my father was Italian, first generation. And even though he divorced my mom, he was in our life. Not as a real role model person. Because my dad was, I'll give you the immediate, if you're looking for a Leave It to Beaver type father, my father never was. Mm-hmm. He and I didn't talk for many years because of me being gay. Mm-hmm. He couldn't handle it. Then finally he came around, and through my own personal experience in therapy, I learned when you have parents. And this goes probably for anybody. The problem with children and parents that I see is children, even as adults, are always looking to their parents of what they wanted their parents to be their whole life.
Right.
this is what I wanted, but that's not what I got.
Mm-hmm.
When you take that equation out and look at that person as a person, maybe they didn't get what they wanted either in life.
Right.
Maybe their whole life, they got stuck being a parent. They had to go to work doing something. Their whole dreams. Because you got to remember, if they were 20, 19, 20, 21, when you came along, they had a whole life and a whole dreams of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So once I realized that my father was not even capable of being a father or...
Never mind a Leave It to Beaver father.
Mm-hmm. Never mind a Leave It to Beaver father. But he was a fun, wonderful person. He was always ready to... If you said, let's go here, he was the first to get in the car and go with you.
Mm-hmm.
He always was a lot of fun. Very upbeat about things. And he came from a very, very abusive father
there
himself.
There you go. That's the issue.
And I, at his funeral, I told my sister and my stepbrothers and sisters, I said, you know what? If you were looking for him to be a father, you were looking for the wrong person. But if you were looking for a fun person that you could look as a person that you liked and as a friend you could like.
If you had met him and not been his child, you would have been buddies.
Oh, everybody loved him, of mm-hmm. course. He never smoked in his life. He never drank, never mm-hmm. did drugs. Straight person his whole life. Now, he had a lot of shady parts to his personality mm-hmm. in life and business things. But that's a whole different avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And once you realize that with any parent, you can move on for yourself.
Yeah.
It's not easy, nope. but you can.
Not at all.
And you just have to look at their dreams, hopes that got shattered too.
And disappointment.
And disappointment.
You are speaking to my soul, my personal experience, because I spent my first 50 years of life trying to change my mother and father into what I wanted.
You can't.
Yeah. At 50,
and you know
I said
what?
No more.
Well, it's not even no more. It's that there has to come a realization that they're a person. They have these hopes and dreams that they started.
They're not my mom and dad. They are these
right.
individuals.
And you know what? If you're trying to create your parents into something in your mind you wanted, it's not going to happen. It's like trying to have a best friend and say, I need you to do this.
Wow.
And they're not going to do it.
Right.
And yeah. so what do you do with that friend? You walk away from them. But your parents, there's that attachment that you can't walk away from.
Well, back up. What you do with that friend is there's boundaries, there's empathy, there's friendship.
Right.
You know.
And see, that's what happened
Children
with me and my father.
Children and parents don't have the friendship. When
we established boundaries. I said, you are not, and I actually sat him down.
How old were you when you did this?
36. I was 36.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I said, you are not the person, the father I need. I said, and if you are not willing to accept me as a gay person the way I am, I'm willing to walk away from you for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out for
wow.
breakfast. I told him that. He lived with it. We didn't speak for 10 years almost.
With
Off and on we did. Mm-hmm. And then in 1940s, when I was in my 40s.
Wait a minute. I thought I almost got your
when
real age.
When he was in my 40s,
when I was in my 40s,
we came and he came around. But he was living in Arizona. I was living in Detroit. And so there was a space between us.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, if we're going to have a relationship, and obviously you want to have a relationship with me, you're not capable of setting boundaries. You're not that type of person. So I am going to set the boundaries of what, as an adult male, what I need from you and what
wow.
you're going to get. Because I'll be the adult in this situation. So that's what it was. And he was fine with that.
Tell me a couple boundaries if they could come to mind.
Well... I don't know.
If nothing comes to mind, that's okay.
I don't know about...
call and show up.
Call me on the phone. After we established we did our relationship, the last probably 10, 11, 12 years of our life, his life,
mm-hmm.
he's been dead 10 years now, but the last, We talked almost every day at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
In fact, the only, for his 75th birthday, I was living in Michigan, and I flew to Arizona. He was living in Nevada in Las Vegas at that time. And I flew to Las Vegas and surprised him for his 75th birthday.
Wow.
And I knew that we talked every day at 10 o'clock in the morning. I went there a couple days early, stayed in a hotel by myself, and I drove into his apartment complex, or his condo complex, at 9:30. I had an Uber pick me up, take me to his thing, and I called him right at 10 o'clock, and I said, hi. I said, happy birthday, Dad. He said, oh, thank you. And it was on his birthday. Mm. And I said, so we're talking, and he says, there's a knock at the door, and it was me. And I had this big sign, happy birthday. Mary, it was the only time in my whole life I ever saw my father cry. He actually broke down, and he almost, he almost fell to, he couldn't believe it.
He said,
I can't believe you're here. No. Every day when he talked to me, he knew when to take his morning pills because he had them all laid out and we'd be talking. He'd say, I got to take my pill now. And he had his pills all laid out. And wow. I went out there, we sat, and he says, I lost count. I don't know where I'm at.
We got to put pictures of your dad on the reel.
Oh.
Yeah. That'll be nice to do.
Oh, I'll show you.
Yeah, show me a picture. And the thing is, I don't know if your mic will break off or not. Will it? Oh, that's the room mic. Is your blue light still on? Let me see.
Yeah. 'Cause
you didn't walk out of area, out of the zone.
This is heavy.
Yeah, so let me see the picture. But now, let me, you know, and you see the journey from he won't deal with you
this
because
was
you're
my,
gay.
This was my... And my parents were divorced 30-some years by then. But this was, they danced at, I had a birthday party.
Look at your
and
dad.
And that's him.
You look like your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You really do.
Mm-hmm.
But now, so you and your dad journeyed from he can't accept you being gay and not speaking to you holding a happy birthday sign at the door for him. You know? Look.
Yeah.
Is this you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's me.
Holy moly!
This is a great. Those are great pictures of him.
You're gonna after we record this, I want you to send us a couple pictures.
This
of that.
Is Tempest.
I was gonna say that looks like Tempest.
It's Tempest, yeah, with my sister
fabulous.
Lori.
Oh my gosh, uh-huh. Tempest, you're fabulous, honey. I'm seeing these pictures. These are from what? They look like the 80s.
No, 1990s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the occasion?
This is
your birthday.
My birthday, and this is. My brother-in-law and my sister, my nephew, Derek.
And your dad, wait a minute, your mom and your dad was at your birthday party.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They became...
With Tempest there, with drag queens around, and...
Oh, yeah, in fact...
You know, they loosen up.
Do you remember Renee telling about the kid that hit her, that she hit in the head with a high heel?
Yes, his boyfriend. Oh, my God.
That's David. That's David.
Is this before the high heel or after
before,
the high
heel? Oh, after the high heel.
You got a picture? It's after?
Yeah.
I'm trying to look.
Oh, he's got it covered up. Renee.
Oh, okay.
That's him. That's Michael.
That's Renee?
No, that's
the
David.
Boyfriend, David.
That's
the boyfriend,
Michael. David. Michael is the one that started all the drag shows in the 70s at Gigi's.
He produced the director.
He managed the whole bar for Tony Garnier. Ran all the shows, everything, and when he decided he ended up moving on and giving it all to Nikki as a thing to take over the shows.
Wow.
Nikki's so, had it now almost 30, well, he's been dead 12, 13
it's
years.
It's like a dynasty and the handing off of the royalty.
And now Nikki's training somebody.
She's got someone?
That'll probably take it over.
Beautiful.
Remember Randy the bartender?
That's a dynasty.
Remember Bandy the bartender?
Upstairs or downstairs? Downstairs, yes.
And remember I said Deja, that's his wife, the one she wasn't performing?
Uh-huh.
That's, I think, who's going to end up taking over the bar.
Okay.
She works at Social Security,
Secretary of State's office.
Wow. And, okay, she got a good job.
Oh, she got a, great job. Oh,
that's beautiful. That's more, that's secure.
But she's pushing 50, and she's been there 20 years, so she could freeze her retirement maybe and then take over
and
Gigi's.
That, and do Gigi's. Okay, now wait a minute. I'm keeping us on task here. Now let's get back to this heel story. And what's Michael's name? What is Michael's
Michael
name?
Michael Swayze.
Michael Swayze. Oh, okay. Patrick's brother. Okay, but now, okay, the heel story. So
Renee. Renee and David were dating.
Renee's full name, please.
Renee Peters.
Renee Peters at Gigi.
Jimmy Brizendes.
That's right. So now
and they were dating.
He's dating this boy, David.
And she caught him playing around when they were living together.
Okay.
And she was throwing her eyes. So 3 o'clock in the morning,
at Gigi.
One popped right into his head.
And I talked with her. I asked her, did you throw the heel or did you hammer it in? She said, I hammered it in.
I had a DJ and everything. Now, this is Paul. Is that Paul?
That's a tall drink of
water. Yeah, that's Paul. He's the one in Texas.
Oh, okay. Your friend in Texas you've told me about. Okay. All right. Wait a minute. We're getting distracted here because I'm keeping us on task. So that's David and the heel story. We were talking about the clothes. See, you completely forgot. I'm looking at you. I'm keeping track. Patty Cakes is keeping track and on task. Finish the story about the soaked clothes at that performance.
Oh, what about it? That's
please.
All. That's
well,
all.
Well, no, because years later.
Oh, years later, she had a best friend.
She is Rachel.
No, Jennifer Fox.
Okay, because Brian, you were headlining with Jennifer.
Tony Brown was her good friend, and he used to do a lot of, he was not a nice person. And years later, we're talking the 2010 or so, 2015, he was friends with another friend of mine, and we were at a barbecue in the afternoon. And he saw me years later, and he had lived in New York. He was a runway model in New York.
Wow, handsome guy, though.
Oh, my God, stunning, stunning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he lived in New York for like 20 years or so, doing runways and stuff, and went to Europe to different shows. He was, I don't know who he was. Somebody said he was with that big Ford. I think Ford.
Ford Modeling Agency.
Ford Modeling.
Yeah.
But I don't. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Eileen Ford was it?
Is yeah. That, maybe that's the name.
Anyway,
it sounds familiar.
So anyway, I didn't follow a lot of them because he and I ran in totally different circles. And years later, we were at this barbecue, and he was very sick. He was very. Had a lot of health issues, and he knew his demise was coming soon, within a couple of years, and he said to me, in that afternoon, he said, I have something I need to apologize to you for, and he admitted to being in the group that did that to my clothes, and soaked them.
Wow.
Yep. So he made amends. He said that it's been something that I've needed to make amends for. For my whole life. He said, I'm glad I have the opportunity to do it. I said, oh, good. I said, I'm glad. I said, well, you know
what? How did you feel at that point? Did you feel good? I felt any apology?
Well, you know what? Apologies are not for the person you did wrong to. Because that hurt.
Uh-huh.
That hurt stays with you from the time it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bat, once it's done, it's like a scar. Mm-hmm. You know, it can heal, it can get mended, but it's always there.
Right.
And so the amend only makes the person who said it feel good about themselves that they were able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, and if it's sincere.
It's sincere.
It's an act of contrition.
But you know what? And it felt fine, but It doesn't make the hurt any less.
And then you receiving it from someone who's dying and trying to make his peace with God and try to get into heaven or whatever they're thinking.
Right.
You know, yeah, you could see that. And
you know, I mean, that's why if you know me as a person, I've really tried to live my life being fair to everybody. And every girl, I mean, you went to Gigi's, you saw, even the young kids gave me the respect
and the honor. And all of them, you know, when I went in that dressing room, they were so sweet. I told you that.
Right. You know what? That's why a lot of times...
It's a family.
Even going out to a lot of the bars where people know me and stuff, the respect they give me is endless. Mm-hmm. Because they know that I've always been a great person. You know, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, did you ever see the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
With Sidney Poitier. Yes.
Did you ever see A Patch of Blue with Shelley Winters?
I may have, but I don't recall it.
Anyway, you know the story. Okay, so that came out in the 60s.
Patch of Blue.
I'll give you an idea how I was raised by my mother. My mother was divorced at the time. It came out, I think, in 1965. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you remember? You probably don't remember when it came out.
I wasn't born through all of this history, honey. Oh. I'm new.
But you know, you remember, I'm sure, and you heard that people picketed it because it was a black man with a white girl.
Right.
That it was totally discriminated. My mom took me and my sister to the show to see it in the show. And I remember I was only like 10, 11 years old.
The show or the movie or what?
Yeah, at the theater.
At the theater.
It was playing at the theater. She loved Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, and she had saw some of Sidney Poitier's stuff. Yeah. And she said, and she really didn't know anything about it. You know, it had just come out. Well, they were picketing. It was in Dearborn at Schaefer Theater. They were picketing outside and everything. Mm. I don't remember exactly, but I remember there was a confusion of us getting into the theater. My mom took us to see it. You know, that's how it. And like yesterday, where you saw my mom, Marjo, at the thing, mm-hmm. is You're one so of her sweet. Dear friends. I mean, she's very accepting mm-hmm. of a lot.
Oh, yeah, the black woman that was sitting next to her.
I'm very fortunate, you know.
Yeah, to have...
To have a mother that's, at 88, that accepting of things.
Yeah, you know? Prejudices were not there. What's her story? Because you mentioned your father's childhood.
My mother was raised as a princess. Her father... My mother's father died in 1947. He died of cancer, and she was 12 years old. And
orphan.
He had six brothers. They owned a tool and die shop in Detroit during World War II that made ammunition and parts for military.
Gotcha.
So they had money. He built a house for my grandmother and everything. And this was in 1947, during the war. Now, you know nobody had money during the war. Mm-hmm. He did. When he died, he left bank accounts for my mom, her brother, and my grandmother so that they never would have to work again. He left them over $50,000 in trust, each one of them.
In the 40s.
In the 40s, 47. Wow. So you know that was a lot. Mm-hmm. My mother was raised like a princess. J.L. Hudson's, which was downtown.
A department store?
It was like Gimbel's.
Or Gimbel's and Marcus and all them.
Yeah. I mean, she used to, if you saw pictures of my mother, I have them somewhere. She had gloves on with hats, and my grandmother used to do her hair in ringlets and stuff. Mm-hmm. She was a princess, and he idolized my mother. Well, when he died, my mother was devastated, and my grandmother ended up marrying an alcoholic. Mm. And they were married in 1952, 53.
I'm curious, what's the age of your mother when this happened, when she went from good dad to bad dad?
15, 16.
Yeah, in high school. Yeah. Okay.
And he went through every dime my grandmother had set aside. He went through it.
What about for the kids?
The kids, too.
Oh, my God.
In fact, my mom's brother, who lives in Cadillac, he is 86 years old until this day. He still will bring up that his mother took and robbed them of all that money. Mm. I mean, he is that angry. He has so much anger and rage in him that he can't even see straight half the time.
And let it go. Now, your mother wasn't affected the same way.
Well, my mom, no. She had a very hard time accepting her. She cried. When she found out I was gay in 1985, 86, something like that, she had a very hard time. She thought it was something that she did wrong, mm-hmm. Being a single mother. And she was married to my stepdad. Oh, it was 1983. Mm-hmm. It was 1983, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Or 80, 1980, 81, I don't know.
Okay.
That's, anyway, yeah. All the years kind of muddled together for me mm-hmm. sometimes. But she went into hysterics mm-hmm. when she found out I was gay. But the real thing is she never got over the death of her father. And she was in her 40s, pushing 50. And I mean, she used to go to the cemetery to see her dad's grave. And in her 20s, 30s, and 40s, she'd stand there and cry like a baby. Mm. Even then. So it was a culmination of me, all this stuff, her divorce. And she ended up going to a psychiatrist whose daughter was a lesbian. So mm-hmm. he really helped her with a lot of her stuff. And she went to him for years.
Mm-hmm. And slowly she drifted into her camp.
Like I told my dad. And you know what? Actually, I wrote the line for Harvey Weinstein.
This series I'm putting together, it's about the history. Mm-hmm. But the only way to get the history of our community is speaking to the knowledge holders. Mm. That's a term I learned in my research. You are a knowledge holder. And we can't let you go. By that, I mean kick the bucket or leave onto your next journey mm-hmm. without having this knowledge. Mm. Because to me, it's not only warming the cockles of my heart, mm. but I'm learning life lessons in this conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, about forgiveness, apology. Mm-hmm. And this is just a beautiful project. Oh. And I'm so grateful
for that. And when I apologize to somebody, I don't care if they accept my apology or not.
That's right.
The only person I do it for is myself.
That's right.
So.
But, and on the other side, someone harms me, I don't care whether they come and apologize. I, in fact, tell them, you know what? That apology is between you and your God.
Exactly.
Because me and my God, I and my God have healed this wound.
Right.
You
right.
know, yep. that you tried yep. to impose on me.
Yep.
That is my philosophy. Okay, now let's get to the storybook. This is drag queen story time, honey.
What do you want to know?
All right. You got to finish. Well, not finish. We did finish the wet clothes story in the corner. Yeah. Now, the teeth.
Oh, the Monique story.
Okay, this is okay. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. The Monique story, boys and girls.
Monique to give.
That was that her name?
Monique Dugive. D-U-G-I-V-E. So,
a play on Dubois, I'm sure. Yes, there must have been a famous Dubois around.
Yeah.
So Monique Dugive. She shall do.
Okay. Did you ever see the thing Laverne and Shirley, the series Laverne and Shirley?
Of course, loved them.
Okay.
Oppenheimer.
Monique.
Shlemiel Shamayel.
Monique's personality, and she imaged herself after Laverne. So if you saw Laverne, she wore a scarf around her neck.
The L.
She always wore a big
initial
M on her things.
All right.
And she was the Laverne. Of life. Yeah. In fact, she was Laverne before there was Laverne. Laverne probably learned from her. Penny Marshall learned from her.
Wow.
Because it's like Madonna who learned from Catherine Kowalczyk, a friend of ours that moved to New York.
Wow.
Catherine Kowalczyk and Madonna actually were roommates at one point. That's a whole nother story.
Now, I wonder what happened to Catherine.
She was a mess. Oh, actually, I don't know what happened to her. I heard a few things, but I lost track of her when she moved.
Well, you know, the reason I ask that is, we know Madonna's success and career.
But right,
I'm curious to see if Madonna reached back for Catherine.
That I don't know, because you know what? I lost track of Catherine. Catherine was somebody that I knew in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
In the 80s. She ended up moving to New York. We used to, a good friend of mine, Kevin, who kept better contact with her, knew a lot about what she was doing in life and stuff like that. Anyway, she ends up telling us about she's with this girl that's going to make it big, and her name's Madonna. She's from Michigan. Madonna was from Michigan. And she used to go to the Menjo's dance clubs that we used to go to, the gay bars.
Okay.
Because Madonna used to go there in the 80s. She used to dance.
Back late then. 70s.
Early 80s.
Madonna came out in 80, 81, maybe 82. 83, 82,
no, Madonna, 84 or 85, something was her first hit.
Okay.
I don't know. Let me see.
Yeah, let's Google that. Because from my recollection, I was in grammar school.
When was Madonna's first song 82, done?
82, 83.
1980, October of 82.
There you go. Patty Cakes won. I got that point.
24 years old singer. Pictures on... so she was 24.
So it's 79. It's 80, 81. You're going through this. 80,
81. Right.
Okay. Catherine's telling you all this about Madonna. 80.
I met Catherine in 1980s then. So this was it. And she moved. She must have moved like in 81.
To
Cause she,
New York.
In fact, she did move in 81. 79, I met her. 80, 81, she moved because I was Miss Gigi's in 82, 83 when I entered my first contest. Mm-hmm. And Catherine was already gone.
Gotcha.
So the contest was actually in 81, so Madonna's first thing was in 82, so she had been there a year with her. Anyway, the look that Madonna had, remember with the jewelry and the scarf
netting,
on her head
on
and all
everything.
That, stolen from Catherine Kowalczyk. Catherine Kowalczyk just like that when I first met her.
Wow.
She was a mess. I'm telling you, girl, she was a mess.
But you know what? We'll maybe, in the after party, we will discuss Catherine Kowalczyk.
Anyway, that's another story.
So let's get back to
Monique
story. Here's the Monique story.
Monique had a drinking problem, and she smoked cigarettes, and she did drugs, too. And she had... She always had sugar daddies along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sugar daddies paid for her to get a full set of caps and teeth in her mouth.
Oh, my God. She looked like a horse.
She had these. Anyway, but what happened? They were beautiful. And this was probably in the middle 60s, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Well.
Okay, in the 60s.
Yeah.
The technology.
No, I mean 60s, 70s. Okay. 70s, because she was a few years older than me. She was Tempest's age, so she's 71. So she was 3 or 4 years older than me. Anyway, as time went on, because she never went to the dentist, the caps fell off, and she'd super glue them back into her mouth, the caps, with super glue.
So she would super glue the caps?
The caps into her mouth.
Oh, my God.
As they fell out. Well, you know, you build that residue, and pretty soon the caps are going back in.
Right.
Well, so what happened is over time, she had pegs on her teeth.
Right, from implants.
Where they put, and she wouldn't go back to the dentist. She was petrified of going back to the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this contest coming up at Gigi's, and the big news is Monique is entering. Monique could do hair like nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
If Monique had not been a drunk and a drug addict, she could have been in New York in any
Fifth Avenue
Broadway show.
Oh my
on
God.
There and do. In fact, in 1776,
the Broadway show.
1776. The 200th anniversary for the United States.
In 1976.
Greenfield Village had their bicentennial big thing.
Mm-hmm.
They hired her to do the period wigs for all the people, her and a couple other people. That's how good she was.
Mm.
She did my hair. She could take a hair that looked like cotton candy and make it look fabulous.
Mm.
Like it was grown out of your hair. She used to do for my Toadie Fields, Ann Miller flip that nobody else could do. Oh, my
what
God.
What artistry and creativity.
Oh,
talent.
My God. And unbelievable. Anyway, so she was going to enter this contest. That was the big news. It was some contest at Gigi's. Miss Amateur Gigi's or Miss Gigi's, whatever it was, she was entering. Nobody saw her for like a month. She comes walking into the show with her stuff, her entourage, helpers, whatever. She smiles and she's got a full set of teeth.
Fabulous
oh my God,
looking.
Fabulous looking.
Went to the dentist set. Looks like.
That's what she's telling everybody.
What's she telling?
I got my teeth all redone.
Oh.
Hey, girl. And at that time on the stage, they had the black light up on across the stage. Because when they put the black light on, they used to have Michael Swayze. He had, you know, the fluorescent black light paint.
Right, right.
That did the stage. So the black light went on and the stage would pop into 3D.
Wow.
Well, anyway, she comes out, I don't even remember, first thing is a parade gown or whatever, and she comes across the stage, smiles, the black light's on, and her teeth go purple. I'm serious, her teeth's purple. Purple. Because those teeth are plastic, and they must have a thing that reflects off of the black light.
Light.
Well, when she smiles, her teeth are all purple. It's like, so she goes in the back, and they're like, girl, where did you get those teeth?
They took a closer look.
They said, girl, where did you get those teeth from? Did you? And this was a big thing. There was a period there where she had the teeth after she had them pulled out, after the warp pegs, she would go, because she knew this guy was a mortician, and she would get false teeth from dead people.
Oh! We and are not going to repeat them. That. You got to rewind and you listen to it, boys and girls.
Anyway, that's another story.
But that's okay.
So anyway, they're questioning her about the teeth. Finally, it comes out, she made them like caps, filled them with epoxy and everything,
oh
and made
God.
Them, filed them down to look like teeth, and super glued them to those pegs in her mouth.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she made them look like real teeth. I'm telling you, she was an artist. She was.
Well, yeah, with the hair,
she was
and
fabulous.
All that makeup, all
I
that,
mean,
so.
she could do anything. Anyway, girl, when it came out, she was through. Of course she was through.
When the news broke.
And she finally had to tell something. She told them.
You can't even eat with something like that, what you're
no,
talking about.
No, but she never. Did you see how skinny she was in those pictures?
Yeah, yeah.
She was this big.
Okay. Mm.
Dennis Bykowski. That was his name.
Monica. What was her full name? Monica what?
Monique. To give.
That's right. You said that at the beginning. So, okay, I'm sorry.
So all that's right. The story of the teeth.
Okay. Now, the last story we're going to close with, and you have to accommodate me. Please tell this story, because when I heard it, I couldn't breathe. We were in Europe when you told me that in the hotel room in Barcelona.
God
okay.
knows which
so,
one.
Canada.
Oh!
Okay, wait. She does, boys and girls, men and women, she does not want to tell you. You heard her reaction, but it's just funny.
It was an international. It was an international booking in Canada
and international incident when it was all over with.
When it was over with. So Miss Rachel was asked to perform at a bar in Canada, where the boys used. It was a go-go bar for boys, and they would have drag queens come in and do shows on the weekend.
In between
the guys, yeah.
Okay.
This was a place where the guys actually danced naked in the end.
That's how Canada is.
They come out, first of all, in an outfit and dance. Then the next time they come out in maybe underwear. And the last time they'd come out in a hard-on, honey, stroking it all over. Oh, wow. Or with a towel on and then take it off and do backflips and everything with their asshole up in the air.
Oh, my God. But not in America, the land
not
of the
in
free.
America. So anyway, Miss Rachel's dressing room was in the same room where these boys were. They stuck her in the corner. Well, Mary, after a couple of cocktails, because I had gotten a hotel room, because whenever I did out-of-town stints, I never came home the same. I stayed in a hotel there because I knew I'd be drinking, and to come across the border again,
right.
I said, no way. So they got me a hotel room. My stipulation was when I performed out-of-town, I got a hotel room, and I got discounts on my drinks.
Okay.
Originally,
it was just drinks.
But they knew Rachel drank too much. Okay. And they said, oh no.
Say that again. Originally?
Originally, Rachel would sign for her drinks were included. Well, then they'd figure out she'd be buying drinks for tricks too.
And that she was
and
a
herself.
Fish. And that she was a fish.
And in those days, I drank Don Q 151.
Wow.
Rum. 3/4 rum, a splash of Coke. With a lot of ice. Fill the glass. You got to fill the glass up with ice.
Uh-huh.
And then you have rum 151 and a splash of Coke.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking about the Canada story. We had a little interruption with Gary joining us. And now we are back. And Miss Rachel.
So anyway, the Happy Tap.
You're staying overnight.
The Happy Tap bar.
In Windsor.
They put me in the dressing room with all the boys.
Big mistake.
Because the boys, to get it hard, they look at dirty magazines and they stroke themselves. Well, I told them, I'd be more than happy to be a fluffer for them.
You put that in the contract too?
Mary, she was getting full. The more she drank, the fuller she got. And see, when I worked, I used to go sit out in the bar. Well, when those boys back there, I was back in the dressing room every minute I could be.
Every possible second.
Yeah. And they started calling me Kashawn.
Mm.
And I said, I don't know. What is it? Oh, it's French for beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, so I'm a Kashawn, or I don't remember what the...
I'm Kashawn, is what you would say.
Anyway, so come to find out, P.S., fast forward, a couple days later, I asked a friend of mine, I said, you know French, don't you? What does Kashawn mean? Well, come to find out, it means pig. And they were going
you
on Kashawn.
You keep choking me with these
Kashawn something or other. And they probably said, this filthy pig woman, drag queen.
She won't leave me alone. Get away from me.
And some of the boys ended up going to another room and leaving because I got aggressive.
Honey. Aggressive is not. Is probably not the word, honey.
Little finger up your
it was
ass.
Probably, you went over the, what's a word that's more than aggressive?
Oh, girl, I think.
Confrontational.
I think there was a couple.
Confrontational. I got confrontational.
I think there was a couple guys that might have even grabbed me or something and said, don't you ever do that again.
Like to push you away.
Ooh, I'll never forget. There was a place called the Gas Station in Detroit. It was a bar. And all the little hustler boys from 7 Mile and Woodward used to hang out there. And Tempest performed there for 17 years on Tuesday nights. Wow. She was the regular guest. Anyway, I used to go up there, and they had a line out the door. Well, as soon as they'd see me, because I always drove Tempest too, we'd walk right in. Mm-hmm. And all the little hustler boys used to, there was this hallway you had to go through from one bar into the big bar area. Mm-hmm. Neil Wilson was the DJ there. Anyway, there was this boy, and Mary, the drunker I got, the cuter he looked, and he was a street hustler from get-go. He had that look going on. So I said something to him. Mary, the next thing I know, he kicked me right in the asshole. Bam! Just like this. I turned around, and I slapped the shit right out of him. I said, who do you think you're doing? Oh, we got in this huge fight. They didn't throw me out because I was with Tempest. They threw him out.
Okay.
Oh, he was so pissed.
Right. But he kicked me right in the ass.
Maybe he was straight.
No.
Well, if he's hanging at
he was not
the
straight.
Gas station.
He was not straight. Mm-hmm. No. Mm. No. See, a lot of these little hustler boys, when we went, because, you know, Detroit, there was a lot of bars, but they were all in the 7 Mile Woodward area.
In the rougher areas.
In the rougher where all the little hustler boys would hang out. Well, when they tell me it's going to cost you, I'd say, it'll cost you. Do you know who I am?
That's a good response.
Oh, I always told
it's going to cost you.
It's going to cost you. I'd say, it's not going to cost me. Nothing's going to cost you money. Okay. Well, that was my main mantra. It'll cost you money.
Not me.
Or buy me a couple drinks.
And I'm yours.
I was bad. Oh, I was bad.
Very naughty, very naughty. All right. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a very nice conversation. I know there are probably questions that I may have missed, but I did try and keep us on task. If you have any questions for Miss Rachel St. John, please email them to me. And maybe on a kind of appendix of the interview, we could tack on some answers. So if you do send them in, I will add them. We will add them because I am a team and not just one person here. And we can attach them to the interview.
Thank you.
And you can continue the joy in the appendix.
Thank you, Patty Cakes.
Thank you. And I have to say, John, let me tell you, the audience, how we met. My dear friend Gary, who is one of the producers of this podcast and a dear friend for 32 years. I don't believe I have friendships for 32 years. Gary was going to, well, Gary and I had planned a trip to Hawaii, cruise, et cetera, et cetera. And before the pandemic and that hit, COVID hit, and we had to postpone it. So everything was expiring at the end of this month, December 31st, 2023, and we shifted the trip to Europe. I don't know why I'm speaking so slow. I think I'm talking so slow because I'm still processing the conversation with Miss Rachel, honey. So let me get to it. Gary brought you along.
Yes.
So I met you. Now, we got to speak a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we ever spoke, I called you while I was walking home from church. Yes, church, because I am a good girl. And you can validate that. Was that true?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we were walking home, and you were so, enthusiastic about the call. Oh, honey, I'm so glad you called and this and that. We hit it off over the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, over the phone. The trip was wonderful, wasn't it?
Fabulous.
Yeah. And John did this trip having had, on a cane, having had, you tell them.
I had broken my femur in June, and we were going in October on this trip. So I had to, in 4 months, I went from broken hip with pins and rods in my leg to walking all around Rome and Spain.
Oh, we dragged her around. We dragged you around. And now that's pretty remarkable at your advanced age, you know, of, what are you, 90, 91 now? Say something, Rachel. Say something. At least cuts me out.
Put the gun away.
She's nowhere near that age, ladies and gentlemen. Do the math. Earlier in the conversation, we told you how old she was at a particular year. So you can do that research yourselves. And so to wrap this up, I'm looking at you square in the eye. I'm saying thank you. I love you.
You're welcome. Love you too.
And I sincerely hope this has entertained our listeners and that you will tune into our episodes as they come out and as they're released.
Thanks for listening to the Patty Cakes Podcast Show.